Chapter 14. Angel in Chains. Trace pulled open the door to the same mechanic station where he had picked up his crappy truck. He flicked on the lights, finding himself alone. A red minivan sat in the bay, a modest vehicle sporting a few scratches and a little hail damage. After he'd circled it once, an auraless Latino practically bounced in, face beaming.
"It's the Trace! Busting the bad guys with style, jumping out of cars to save the ladies. You, my friend, are awesome! And Corinth, and it's totally an honor, dude."
Corinth led him through a fancy handshake full of contortions and ending in a knuckle bump. He wore camo pants, a tank top, and had no qualms about beefing his muscles to beach-ready perfection. He tried to man up his baby face with a close-cropped black mohawk and thin goatee. It didn't work. Corinth looked at the van and rubbed his hands together.
"Let's see what we got."
He opened the rear hatch while Trace yanked open the sliding door. The mechanics had ripped out the third row bench to make room for the equipment, which was all packed nicely in worn luggage that befitted the character of the van. They had even pre-soiled the floor with fast food garbage, pretzel chunks, and mutilated M&Ms. Trace nodded. Impressive. "Detail means invisibility," Cassandra had once told him in reference to morphing. If only splotching the skin had added wrinkles to his face were as easy as throwing a crumpled burger wrapper on the floor.
"You trained with Cassandra, right?" Trace asked.
"Yep," Corinth said, shutting the hatch. "She is about 400 kinds of delicious. Sometimes I wish I had a different trainer. It makes it hard for her to see me as anything but a student, you know what I'm saying? She call you by your real name?"
"No, she calls me Jarhead.
I was Chumpkins forever. She calls me Corinth now. Man, if I could just get that girl to notice me."
"You want to date her?" Trace's mind spun. "She seems a bit unfriendly to me."
"Dude," Corinth said, lowering his rich baritone voice. "You didn't hear about the deal with Goldbo?"
At last he would get the scoop.
"Well, I figured out that they were together, but..."
"Okay, gentlemen," Cassandra barked as she entered the garage. She had morphed into a teenage girl of about 16, though her air of command belied her looks.
"Let's get out of here. We'll do the mission briefing in the van. We have a long way to drive. Jarhead, you're at the wheel. You need to morph a bit to look like you could be the dad of two teenagers. Chumpkins, why aren't you morphed yet?"
"Hey, Cassie, good to see you too, and it's Corinth. No one told me nothing about this mission, so I don't know what to morph into."
"My teenage brother. If it comes to it, Jarhead will act like our dad. We'll pass off Goldbo as stupid Uncle Mitch. Since Trace decided to choose the lame name Jason Storm for himself, we are the ridiculous-sounding Storm family. I am Gwen Storm, and Corinth, you will be Julian Storm."
Corinth laughed. He was already slimming down and getting younger. How did they do it so fast?
"Jason Storm," Corinth said, grinning. "Sounds like a wrestler's name. And if you get into the ring with Jason Storm, prepare to feel the thunder."
Cassandra shook her head and got in the van. Goldbo arrived shortly after, dressed in jeans and a t-shirt, and morphed to middle age. He still walked like a hunter, confident and purposeful, and he had his own bag he plopped into the back of the minivan. It was heavy enough to bounce the suspension. After Corinth gave him a man hug, they got into the vehicle, Trace and Goldbo in the front, Cassandra and Corinth in the back.
"Hey, Cassie," Corinth said as Trace drove out of the garage. "How about we change things up and we go as boyfriend and girlfriend?"
"Well," Cassandra began, ignoring Corinth completely.
"Here's the deal. We're going to Seattle."
"Are you serious?" Goldbo exclaimed.
"We're driving to Seattle. We're in Phoenix. Did the Gabriels forget about airplanes?"
"Look, it sucks, but that's the plan," Cassandra answered. "This is an important mission, and since the Dreads have apparently pulled their heads out, operations felt they might be watching the airports. So we drive."
"Road trips are hell when you can't sleep," Goldbo lamented.
"Grow up and deal with it, Goldbo," Cassandra scolded. "The mission revolves around Telomerin."
Trace had heard the name before.
The pop singer?
It's Christian Alternative, Corinth corrected. She's up and coming and totally fine.
And she's an attuned, Cassandra added. There are a few things everyone should know about her. I just learned all this myself. Tella's mother died during childbirth, and Tella's father raised her. When she was 5, she and her father were in a grocery store, and she was scared out of her wits by a nearby dread. The dread picked up on her fear and recognized her as someone special. The Oculum had a vision that the dreads would come for her, and operations sent a Gabriel team in to protect her and her father. The team was led by an Ash Angel Blank named Talisman. They got there just in time to get into a firefight, and a stray BBG bullet from Talisman's gun killed Tella's father. Talisman couldn't take the guilt and morphed into a close enough semblance of Tella's father to pass for him. He quit the AAO and spent the next 15 years raising her as her own.
That is incredible, Trace commented.
It is. Talisman reached his 5th ascendancy a couple years ago, and realizing he would soon reach his 6th and leave the mortal plane, he faked a heart attack during her freshman year of college. Talisman contacted the Ash Angels a year ago and informed them that Tella was an attuned and had the ability to sense Ash Angels and dreads on a subconscious level. But even more remarkable, she is a dreamer, which means she sees the future like the Ash Angel cryptics in the Oculum. His death inspired her music, and at 21 she's just released her 2nd album and getting her shot. Her first big concert is in Seattle tomorrow. Now, one of the Oculum visionaries had a foretelling about her on the night of the concert. The vision showed her in the trunk of a car, bound with duct tape and gagged. The time on her cell phone was 8:42 p.m. tomorrow, clearly sometime during the concert, which starts at 7:30. That's all we know. Operations is working on getting us backstage passes, but the short notice makes it difficult.
So what's our angle, Cassie? Goldbow asked.
Corinth and I will be on the front row. Trace will be running comms and surveillance from a hotel across the street with a good view of the convention center. Goldbow will be in a car on the street near the protected entrance where we think Tella will come in and leave. We should arrive in Seattle at 10 a.m. tomorrow, which means we won't have much time to be proactive. We'll be playing defense on this one.
Corinth put his hand suggestively on Cassandra's knee.
Don't worry, Cassie. I'll keep my eye on you.
Cassandra reached down and yanked one of Corinth's fingers backward until it snapped.
I got 4 more, baby, Corinth said suavely.
Switch me, Goldbow, Cassandra said. She undid her seatbelt, and after some contortions and flopping about that nearly sent Trace off the road, Cassandra managed to take shotgun and buckle herself in while muttering obscenities under her breath.
Do we have any of Tella's music? Trace asked after letting Cassandra fume for a while.
Operations downloaded both her albums onto my phone, she answered. Not really the kind of stuff I like. Her 1st album is In Memoriam, her 2nd, Angel in Chains.
Ominous, Trace commented.
Let's hear it.
Okay, but we need to do some training while we're on the road. Let's talk about the equipment you'll be using. Hopefully it will be somewhat familiar to you from your Jarhead days.
Trace's passengers had retreated into their own electronic worlds after Goldbow's seal stories, and everyone's mission speculations ran out. The blackness of a starless night enveloped the van. Traveling as an Ash Angel was strange. No frantic bathroom stops, no aching back and legs, no junk food. It all seemed wrong. If the car didn't run out of gas periodically, he could have driven forever. As the van hummed along through a light rain, Dr. Oberon's words from their 1st counseling session kept returning to him.
Forgiveness, Trace, has nothing to do with assigning blame or getting to the root cause of the hurt or ensuring everyone receives the punishment he or she deserves. You were wronged, Trace. It's natural and perfectly okay to feel sadness and betrayal. But holding fast to the hopes and possibilities of the future is the only way to pry the strangling hands of the past off your neck. Let Teresa go, Trace. Let Trace go. Let the Ash Angel be born.
Trace thanked himself for going. Oberon proved kinder and more understanding than he had anticipated. Perhaps most comforting were his reassurances that many Ash Angels, cherubs in particular, had difficulty moving forward after the traumatic events that resulted in their deaths. Trace resolved to follow Oberon's advice, but they were heading to the northwest. He and Teresa had toured the coast for their honeymoon. They had even driven through the night in a rain much like the one that currently blotted his windshield. They had stopped at a little bed and breakfast on the beach, walked by the ocean in the rain, her clothes soaked and clinging. Taking Oberon's advice, he tried to wall off the thoughts about his past and focus on the mission that waited nearly 500 miles ahead. He had listened to both of Tella's albums twice. He had wanted to listen to the second album, Angel in Chains, again, but Cassandra had commandeered her phone to listen to her own music to pass the time. Tella's music and her expressive, silky voice had matured in her second effort, and the title track of the album stuck with him for its stark imagery. If she was a dreamer, then surely this song had grown from a nightmare. Here's an angel in chains, chains of pictures and frames, links of smiles and delight, bonds of pleasure and pain. An angel ashamed, wings soaked in the rain, his halo still shines for the lives left unclaimed. Dark water floods dreams, running deep underneath, swelling the tide, pulled by secrets he keeps. He knows the stars see, ashes gray at his feet, the place where he fell and where blood will be. He's an angel in chains, chains of pictures and frames, links of smiles and delight, bonds of pleasure and pain. Where Tella wasn't attuned, surely this song represented a message of some kind. Perhaps her ash angel father never told her that her dreams were something more than fleeting visions in the night. Trace was sure Angel in Chains meant something, though he couldn't say why, save that the subject of the song was a troubled angel. Deep thoughts, Jarhead? Cassandra said sharply, jolting him out of his meditation. He waited to answer until she had pulled her earbuds out. It's that song, Angel in Chains. She cocked her head questioningly. You think it means something, or are you Tella's newest fanboy? Trace shrugged. I think it does. I don't know. I'm not claiming any divine inspiration here. It's just a hunch. If you get backstage passes, maybe you can ask her about it for me. I'm guessing it was one of those visionary dreams. I will. Where are we? She asked, searching for road signs. We just crossed the Oregon border. We've got less than 500 miles to go. She checked her watch. Looks like we're on schedule, Jarhead. That'll look good on your active mission evaluation. Knows how to drive the speed limit. Look, he retorted, noting her mocking tone. I need this mission to go well, so maybe I can do one official thing as an Ash Angel that doesn't have my butt being hauled into someone's office. Yes, if you were driving, we'd be there by now, but I don't have that little beauty trick you do to get me out of speeding tickets, and I'm guessing that if I do get a speeding ticket, I'll have to fill out some stupid form. She grinned. You are correct. They track and take care of traffic violation expenditures and then send you a 555-N, a payment restitution disclosure, which basically states they'll dock your stipend for the amount. I haven't talked my way out of all my tickets, but while the monkeys in the back are occupied, let's talk about your bestowal a bit. Sounds good, he said. I've been wondering what its limitations are. When your bestowal was first given, you could use it without conscious thought. From here on out, you have to exert your will. Using it will fatigue you. Use it enough, and you'll feel nearly mortal again. It's also like a faucet. You can use a little Virtus or a lot. You can use a little when firing those big blessed guns to negate the effects of kickback, for instance. He raised his eyebrows. Cool. So, if I decide to use it all up at once, picking up a car, or... She laughed. You really do have a superhero complex. Sorry, go on. If I use it all doing whatever, does it recharge or something? Virtus comes back with the dawn, like everything else, she explained. You've got to be smart about how you use it, and you'll have to experiment to understand your limitations. It goes without saying that you have to be careful about what you do when normals are around. No car lifting on Main Street during rush hour, okay, Mr. Superstorm?
He was beginning to regret his choice of cover name.
So how does it work for something like Beauty? Does that have levels too?
Yep. I was only using a little at your apartment the other day.
Wow. What would happen if you cranked it up, besides getting phone numbers from every man inside a mile?
I don't know, she shrugged. I've never really had to go that far with it to get what I needed. I've only cranked it up a couple of times in private. But, hey, you wanted to listen to that song, right?
Trace wondered at the sudden shift and glanced over at her. She was flipping through the list of songs on her phone as if nothing else mattered, plugging the adapter into the stereo when she had found Angel in Chains. Trace decided not to push her. Personal inquiries got him pain and information at about a 10-to-1 ratio. Cassandra was a private person, and he wondered if there was anyone she trusted enough to confide in. He would wait and avail himself of Corinth's information as soon as he could. Thanks to some unexpected traffic near Seattle, they pulled into the parking lot of the Marriott Hotel at 10:23 in the morning, 23 minutes late. Cassandra mocked him with a long look at her watch and a shake of her head. They were dressed more for a Super 8 than a Marriott, but they rolled into the lobby in character. Corinth and Cassandra expertly played teenagers, while Goldbow followed behind, looking out of place, carrying his heavy black bag. Trace had to use his strength to make it look like his own ridiculously heavy suitcase wasn't filled with guns and ammunition. In short order, all their equipment lay on the twin king beds of room 902. They had chosen a balcony room with a good view of the Bronson Convention Center across the street. The semicircular front was done in granite and glass, and with a good scope, Trace could keep tabs on the front, most of the left side, and a good portion of the street running on the front and right. Goldbow would take the parking garage entrance on the right, while Cassandra and Corinth attended the concert.
I'm going to take Corinth for a look around, Cassandra announced, shoving her earbuds in her ears. You two morons stay here and get the equipment put together.
She left without waiting for any kind of response, Corinth suggesting that they take a swim together in the indoor pool. Goldbow opened his bag and sat heavily on the bed to inspect the broken-down rifle it contained. Trace unzipped the largest suitcase to find it contained a big blessed sniper rifle, complete with scope and high-caliber ammunition. The effective range was comparable to other sniper rifles he had fired, and the custom bullets would devastate the dreads. The Ash Angel weaponsmiths had even managed to silence the weapon to a reasonable level, though it was far from quiet. Trace glanced over at his brooding teammate.
You all right? He asked.
Yeah, Goldbow answered curtly.
Me next girlfriend?
Goldbow grunted.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, man. If you want to talk.
Trace doubted Goldbow would take the bait, but was surprised when the man put his rifle down and crossed his hands over his knees, his countenance falling.
I suppose you've heard rumors about the whole mess, he probed.
Not a thing, Trace replied truthfully. I'm a bit isolated from the rest of the cherubs, and Cassandra isn't much for talking about her past. He exhaled.
It's not too complicated. I 44-2'd her in the middle of an op.
You bailed on her during a mission? Trace asked. Cassandra's anger suddenly started to make sense. He nodded, face pained.
We got word of this dread stew pimping underage girls. Cassandra and I had been together for about 4 months at that point. It was going well. At least I thought it was. We were running with a short-handed team. Just Cassandra, me, and another Gabriel. It was supposed to be pretty simple. Cassie was going to act like a troubled runaway and infiltrate the club they ran the prostitution ring out of. She was just supposed to go in, drop Stu, extract his heart, and get out. So she gets past a thug outside and eventually heads in. Not a minute after, dreads come out of the woodwork from side buildings and cars. There must have been at least 10 of them. I'm terrified for Cassie. Especially when the shooting starts, but operations tells us to bail since we have auras and are easily spotted. At that point, we see some dreads coming up from behind in a car.
I tell Cassie we've been pulled back, but she's yelling for help anyway. I should have done what you did with Priscilla. I should have charged in there, guns blazing, and rocked the dreads or died trying. But I left her. I followed orders and got out. I'm lucky she doesn't off me herself. I've got some clout with Ramus, so he's done me a favor by getting me on these missions with her, but she won't even look at me. That's hard, Trace commiserated as vaguely as he could. He could sympathize with Cassandra. Being 44-2'd was bad enough, but being left to die by your boyfriend? He couldn't imagine any relationship surviving after that. Goldbow was clearly trying to get her attention again, but Cassandra certainly didn't seem the forgiving type. In fact, Corinth's and Goldbow's romantic obsession with Cassandra boggled his mind. So what is it you and Corinth see in Cassandra? I mean, she's good-looking and all that, but she seems a little, well, hard to get along with, to put it mildly. You know she left the Ash Angels for a while, right?
Yep.
Golbo retrieved his rifle. Well, since that mission, she's been angry, really angry at everyone and everything. She wasn't always like that. She was a cop in her former life and has always been blunt. But you're just getting the fallout from my screw-up. Some people think she was so angry she had something to do with the Black Massacre, which makes me want to tear some heads off. Ramus managed to convince her to come back to train you, but for a while there I thought she would blow into the wind. I envy you, Blanks, for that. You can go live just like everyone else if you want. Yeah, Trace said. He liked that part too. So, Trace, what about you? How did you die? Trace had to fight back the natural instinct to bury the event behind a wall of shame. Dr. Oberon had encouraged him not to bottle it up. If he could talk to people about it, the sting and the stigma would dissipate. Still, he feared the story would start jokes about how he wasn't man enough for his wife. He choked back the emotion that came with memories still as fresh as the day he was revivified. He shut the suitcase and folded his arms. I was shot by the wife of my wife's lover. Goldbow's eyes raised. Damn. I suppose you were shielding your wife? Her lover, actually. Double damn. You must be some sort of a saint. I bet you want to take a little road trip and knock some heads in. Don't want to open that wound right now. I've got better things to do. Goldbow's Ash Angel phone rang, and he answered it. Talk to me, Cassie. Trace couldn't hear the short conversation, but Goldbow's face turned more and more grave the longer he listened. After he hung up, he threw the phone on the bed and set to assembling his rifle in earnest. Cassie says they've seen two dreads in the area. Looks like this mission is going to get hot.